Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 518. I'll be performing in Salt Lake City, well, West Valley City, Utah, which is essentially, they're touching. They're touching each other, Kyle. They're touching each other.
I think that's illegal in Utah for cities to touch.
They're touching each other appropriately.
Okay.
I will be there May 29th, 30th, and 31st, performing at Wise Guys in West Valley City, Utah. So please go get tickets for that. Wise Guys, West Valley City, Utah. Don't know what the... I probably should know what the website is. But you know what? You have a Google. You know what? You just have your search bar. You know, if you're using Chrome, just type it in.
You've given them enough information that they can't find it. They didn't want to go.
Just type it into your Universal Resource Locator bar. And then it'll come up, and then you can get tickets. But please come. I was there last year. It was super, super, super fun. You know who the sponsor is this episode of the podcast?
I don't know. I wish I could see it with these old glasses of mine.
Well, you're in luck, Kyle,
Ooh.
Because a new concept in eyewear is about to clear your vision, but without clearing your wallet. I just made that up. I feel like that should totally be a thing.
That is some quality copy.
Thank you very much.
Copy.
Yeah, it wasn't even... copy.
Idea, improv school where it's just improving towards making better ad copy.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
So much money.
And then in the advertising business, that's not a bad idea. But we're here to talk about Warby Parker, which is a really great, easy way to get prescription glasses starting at $95, which includes lenses. All right? So the way that it works is you go to warbyparker.com/nerdist.
All right.
You choose 5 free home try-on frames.
3, 4, okay? 5 are set.
That's right. Now, you pick the frame you want. You send them back. You choose your favorite pair, like I said. And then Warby Parker makes your experience completely risk-free. Free shipping. And then they'll send them back to you.
Oh.
And then you have your glasses right there. So you actually get to... It's tough to buy online because you don't know how it's going to look in person. So they make that super easy. And glasses should not cost as much as an iPhone, Kyle.
I agree.
So $99. $95 is a great way. Their titanium collection starts at $145. But then that's really about the most you're going to pay. All glasses include anti-reflective and anti-glare coating, and there's no additional costs. So go to warbyparker.com/nerdist, choose your 5 free home try-on frames, pick one. Then when you select the glasses that you want, they will give you 3-day free shipping with the glasses that you've purchased.
Free shipping for the chosen one.
That's right. So, warbyparker.com, thanks for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Jennifer Morrison.
What?
Listen, I mean, you know, Once Upon a Time, super fun show. I was a big House fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a fan of a lot of things Jennifer Morrison has done. And what a fun guest. She came to play.
She did.
I liked her.
She was a good time.
I enjoyed having her on. And then she popped on at midnight as well.
Ooh.
Jennifer Morrison, Once Upon a Time season finale is this Sunday, May 11th. So follow her. I believe she's Jen Morrison Live on Twitter.
Mm.
And your life will be enriched with goodness
Agreed.
As such.
Agreed.
It was an absolute pleasure on the Nerdist Podcast, number 518 with Jennifer Morrison.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Let us begin the podcast. I'm going to go into airplane mode. Do you want the comfy chair? You don't have to have the crappy...
I felt like it was a lot of pressure.
Is it a lot of pressure?
It just felt like a little... Yeah.
I've called you all here for a reason.
Yeah, I felt like it was an
like you should be the company.
Sales are down. Jennifer, please tell us what's going on in marketing.
I feel like if we marketed better...
Okay, guys, let her finish. Okay, okay.
Market, the marketing department.
Yeah.
No one's ever thought of that.
See?
You're fired.
Wait a minute. Let's repeat what she said.
No. She said it better than you did.
Today I've lost my job and my voice.
Well, good. Your voice is fired.
Yes.
Get out. Pack your voice and get out.
Your voice is fired. That's amazing.
Thanks for doing the podcast. Have you done a podcast before? Is this your first podcast?
I'm not as special as this one. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
They're all special. Jennifer, there's...
This is extra special. No one else has ever given me a green tea Kit Kat.
A green tea Kit Kat. Yeah. Here, you can take that one for later.
Okay.
Too. They're so good. If you go to Japantown, like just downtown, if you go to Japantown, the stores have them. You can buy bags.
I'm going to have to go find Japantown. I didn't know we had a Japantown.
Well, it's Little Tokyo in Los Angeles. It's Little Tokyo.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking San Francisco is Japantown. Tokyo in Los Angeles.
It's just downtown. All it's right. just like if you're... It's to the east of downtown.
Okay. The east. Oh, that's very east because downtown is east. So we're east.
Actually, downtown is pretty central.
How dare you correct the guest? You're fired. You're fired again.
What? It's not central to my life.
It's central to Los Angeles, the entire city.
It doesn't feel like LA has a center. Los Angeles feels like the universe where you go, it's this ever-expanding mass that must have a center somewhere.
Yeah, but how is that? What's east of that makes downtown center?
Boyle Heights, just a ton of communities, San Marino.
You're listening to Geography Talk today.
Yeah.
Los Angeles.
Just because you don't go there doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
That's I just love
true.
The idea that Boyle Heights, like no one has said the term Boyle Heights
I don't think I've ever
on this
heard
podcast before.
That's true.
Boyle Heights. Do you live in Boyle Heights?
No, but I've gone there
it's
a bunch.
Probably really it's really nice.
It's really cool.
Little Tokyo is amazing. It's basically just this small Japanese community downtown. With a ton of amazing restaurants and shops and
cool.
and food and candy. And
the best time to go is New Year's Day. They have it's like an entire town-wide festival.
Wow.
And there's just like tons of like performances going on and music on the streets and a ton
amazing.
Of food vendors everywhere. It's great. It's like, it's kind of my New Year's tradition.
You sound like Kim Carnes. You sing Betty Davis eyes.
Sorry.
Is this not how your voice normally sounds?
No. I usually sound a lot dorkier than this cool sounding voice.
You've got a nice, sexy, husky voice going on today.
Yeah. I'm fulfilling my dream of smoking cigarettes.
Did you smoke cigarettes?
No, God, no. I'm not an idiot. My wife is we're fostering a cat that I'm allergic to.
We're fostering a dog. I'm not allergic to it though.
It's like we got it with the intent of having it, and then because we already have a cat, but this cat is not going well with my allergies.
Interesting. So your other cat doesn't make you allergic?
No, it's been real spotty. I mean, I even once my childhood cat, I got allergic to. Like we got it, and I was fine, and like a few years later, if I touched it, I would start.
So you're just a pain in the ass.
Well, I'm afraid of commitment.
My body's ever changing.
Why do you hate animals so much?
I don't hate.
You think your wife's going to be like, when are you going to get allergic to me?
She did make that joke.
And you were like 2016. Mm-hmm. You're fostering a dog.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of dog?
She's like a little terrier mix. Her name is Karen. Well, actually, yes! I know. Well, we had to. We ended up giving in and keeping Karen. But
Karen Terrier.
Yes, but there was Will and Karen. We've placed Will. My roommate really is responsible for this. She loves fostering dogs, and so we've done this several times. But this one, everybody fell in love with, so this one's staying.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
And I also love the fact that, I mean, listen, Jennifer, you're a very successful television person. You have a roommate. You could live in a storybook mansion if you wanted to.
I'm very lucky. I have a very nice house, you know, but it's nice to have friends there. I work in Vancouver, so.
Speaking of house, Cameron and Chase, what happened?
I don't know. God, that was so long ago.
No, you don't have to. It's fine.
Okay.
You don't have to.
I could really try to come up with something for you.
How often do people on the street confuse you with the characters that you've played in television and film? And force you to answer questions like that?
It's not so much that they confuse me as that I feel like I do get treated like I am the character. So mm-hmm. like when I was playing Cameron, people treated me like I was a doctor. They'd be very cautious with me. They'd be like, hey, I really... And they kind of always have their hands out a little bit. And you're like, I really like you on the show. I don't want to bother you, but they're just so... you know, there's so much cool medicine, and I get really into it. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, thank you. And then now that I'm doing Once Upon a Time, everyone thinks I, like, grew up on the streets and had this rough life, and you know, I'm trying to deal with this new adjustment to realizing this that I'm a fairy tale character and all these things. So everybody wants to hug me. So now it's a whole different thing where it's like I kind of get the smack on the back and then the hug. It's mm-hmm. like, Emma! you know, like, and then sure. And so it's like I get handled differently.
When they do that, you should go, "How dare you? I'm a doctor."
Like, you know, yeah, exactly. I was like, "Wow, people were much more careful with me when I was a doctor on TV," you know. But it's, yeah, it's funny. We go into people's living rooms once a week, so it affects people's mindsets about you, you know?
It does, but it is, I mean, as savvy as people are about television, and I feel like they're savvier now than in the history of television because there's so much
yeah, it's
behind
like Hulu and all that stuff. Yeah, it's like,
but there is still, it is so hard to separate because you're so used to...
I get it. I do the same thing. I mean, and I end up at events where I'm looking at someone going, "Have I met you? Or do I just know the show? Or do I know the show and I met you?" Or, you know, it's just, you get in these situations where I feel the same. I have my favorite shows, too. So I, you know, I think Tatiana from Black Orphan is like my bud, but we've never met.
Well, and the...
Black Orphan is a completely different show from Orphan Black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's
sorry, did I just say Black
Orphan? Black
Orphan
is like a real sad documentary.
Sorry, I meant Orphan Black. Oh, my God. Sorry. Orphan Black. Jeez. Sorry.
But I do the same thing with friends that are on shows. I have actually accidentally called them by their character's name.
Oh,
like
really?
Really good friends where that should not be a mistake. That should happen.
Yeah, I was just working on a film set where there was a Cameron and another Jennifer and an Emma. And I was just screwed and I never responded to my character's name. My character's name was Candace and I just wasn't used to Candace, but I would respond for everyone else. So anytime they said Cameron, Emma, or Jennifer, I was like, "Yes?" And they were like, no, you're Candace. I was like, right, I'm Candace. I'm not any of the other three names.
Jennifer Morrison's a weird method actress. She thinks she's all of her characters. You say one, she'll answer.
You crazy, J-Mo.
I do have to say that you were also in one of the fucking best, I guess horror movies, not really, maybe sort of a horror movie, but I loved Stir of Echoes. That
oh, cool.
That is a fucking great movie.
Thanks. Yeah, I really enjoyed doing that. And I'm weirdly about to work with Kevin Bacon again. So, and that's, I haven't worked with him since then, so I'm kind of excited about that. But yeah, it was such a cool little movie, and I had such a good time doing that. And it weirdly came out right around when Sixth Sense did, so we kind of got buried under Sixth Sense. But
oh man,
I know.
What does M. Night Shyamalan not ruin? God damn it! But Stir of Echoes was, well, Sixth Sense was a good movie. Stir of Echoes was also a really good movie, and sorry,
I played the dead creepy thing in the wall.
Yes. But it's one of those, and it didn't occur to me. I looked it up recently. When did the movie come out? It was like 99.
Yeah, I was in college, and it was crazy because I was going to school while I was shooting that. So they had dyed my hair black. I had gained some weight for it. They bleached my eyebrows. And so I had black hair, no eyebrows, and I was working all night and then going to school all day. Oh, so geez. I was that creepy girl. I literally was like the crazy person in college where people were like, "Who's the weird girl? Like, who's the weird chick in the back of the class that seems to be falling asleep all the time?"
She's a crazy ghost girl. You see her too?
Yeah, exactly.
That's her.
As the sirens go by. yeah, but that's, I think, that, I'm sure people who listen to the podcast have seen it, but if they haven't, they really should, because it's a simple story, but when you start catching on, it gets
yeah.
I thought
cool. Kevin Bacon and Catherine Erby together as a couple were just so great, and it felt like they were a real married couple.
And I love an Ileana Douglas in the thing.
She's so good. Yeah, she's so awesome. And I don't know. I felt like it was genuinely creepy in the way that you wanted a movie to be genuinely creepy.
Yeah, and without a lot of like, whoa.
Yeah, there was really no gore. It really was just the intensity of like, oh, what's going to happen next? Oh,
nice. So then after that, did you leave school? Or were you still in school? Did you finish school?
I finished school, yeah. My parents are both teachers, and so I just grew up with the mindset of thinking it was important to finish school. So I finished at Loyola in Chicago, and then I studied at Steppenwolf, and then I moved out here.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because you're from Illinois, Chicago?
Yeah,
Chicagoland
area.
Nice.
Yeah.
Were you a comedy goer in Chicago?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, Second City is the best. And when I was at Steppenwolf, Sheldon Patinkin, who does a lot of the improv stuff for them, he was teaching our improv classes. So it was really fun to be able to watch some of the exercises that would turn into some of the skits that we would see. You know, so just seeing what those improvs start as and then seeing how that could evolve into a skit was kind of fun to participate in.
What are you – the difference – so if you're – because I'm not – I would not call myself an actor, but and nor would anyone else.
We all are, though.
No,
are we all?
I mean, we're all performers to a degree. They're all just different shades of performing. But did you major in theater?
Did I
study theater? So you study theater, and then you're in the Steppenwolf Theater Company. But then
I feel like television and film, and even television and film are different, but just the mechanisms between theater and television, what was your learning curve?
You know, I think I always felt like it was best to just learn by doing it. You can only learn so much. I can't tell you how many times I've been on the set of numerous things, but especially Once Upon a Time, like, wow, they really didn't teach you to respond to imaginary creatures coming at you while wielding a sword and a gun at the same time and running in heels. Like, that's just not taught at theater school, you know? So there's all sorts of weird expectations that get put on you. And also even just time crunch things. You get into situations with the schedule where we have to break for lunch and the crew is going to have to go into overtime if you don't break at lunch at a certain time. So you get one take of your close-up after you just spent the whole, you know, it's just the pressure elements of delivering under pressure and stuff like that, that they don't, there's just no way to teach at school, I don't think. So, I spent a lot of time doing theater from the time I was kind of, I don't know, I guess it was like five, the first community theater play that I did. And that was really the world that I knew. And then you just try stuff and you hope that it works and you kind of pretend like you know what you're doing until you sort of know what you're doing. And I still only sort of know what I'm doing.
You still feel like that?
I don't know if that feeling ever goes away.
That's good. That's comforting to know. I think most people like to know that because, now after like 15 years of working and you still sort of feel like, I think this is the right thing. I don't know.
I think you just have to be really good at bullshitting. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say
like in life in general, you know.
You can say bullshit. You can't say fuck.
No, you just said it though.
What?
It sounds sexy the way you said
what?
It though. Say it again.
Say what?
What
we
you
should
said.
Have him talk more with this voice. It's really going more? Well.
What do you guys want me to say?
Oh,
that I'm here.
Sing that Tom Waits song. See, you could sing the Tom Waits song, and it would be like the last scene of House. Sorry to bring it up again.
Yes.
It's just one of the musical montages. The musical montage
we
episodes.
We just see fire all around us.
Yeah, exactly. That episode where you had to tell that lady she was going to die of cancer, and she just came in for a cough, and it was the first time you had to tell someone they were going to die. Come on!
You so much. That's amazing.
How do you sleep at night after that?
Gosh, you remember that with more detail than I do. I don't know.
The musical montage.
Cameron had a big heart, that's for sure. She definitely always was empathetic toward everyone and fell in love with all of her patients. Not, you know, romantically, I just mean wanting them to be better. Cameron definitely wore her heart on her sleeve that way.
I could never. That's a serious medical condition. Well, you should.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the other thing you didn't see about her character is her heart was on her arm. Literally.
Yeah. Explains everything.
Yeah, she had arm heart. But I would never. That to me, sometimes that show is even hard to watch because sometimes I kind of drift into this territory where if I hear about an illness, I'll go, oh, I think maybe I. Oh, I don't know.
There was a lot of hypochondria stuff going on that set for sure.
Because that wasn't even just like a normal, like a regular hospital. That was like these are the weird, fringy things that happen to people, and
right.
Dr. Sherlock's got to solve it, and you know
exactly.
So do you have that at all?
I'm okay. I've never really been that person. I've done pretty well at avoiding thinking that I'm sick when I'm not. I don't know. I think if anything, it went the opposite direction for me. Knowing a little bit more about stuff helped me know that something terrible wasn't wrong.
Right.
You know? So like when I could jump to some really grand leap of logic, I would go, wait a second. And I would kind of break it down into symptoms and be like, all right, so I'm not dying. You know, like I could eliminate that and then sort of work from there. But for me, it definitely helped to know a little bit more, not hurt to know a little bit more. Whereas some of the other people on set, that was definitely not the case.
Well, with Once Upon a Time, I'm sure it's not like you go home and go, I think I'm going to be attacked by magical creatures. Like you.
I think all the time.
Oh, nice.
And I am attacked by magical creatures all the time.
What?
No, I'm kidding. It is funny to work on a show like Once Upon a Time with magical creatures. Because you have to keep finding ways to make them seem real, you know? It's like a different kind of challenge. When you just go to work and you're saying something that is real that you would connect with in your own life, there's a certain assurance that you have that you're like, "Okay, this is where we start. At least we have a common ground to start here." When you go to work and it's like, okay, so this is when Peter Pan flies in and then the Seven Dwarfs show up and you're friends with Red Riding Hood, but when Jiminy the Cricket is actually a cricket, he's saying one thing, but when you know, it's, you're like, wait, hang on, the logic is so crazy, and you're trying to figure out how to be invested in these people and make it seem real, and the stakes have to always be life or death, so then you're trying to figure out how to do that without being over the top. It's a kind of a constant weird juggling act.
That seems incredible, just to have to ground the most silly thing.
Well, so you're like, oh, so over here there's going to be a fairy up here, but to you it's going to look like a tennis ball and a stick.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's when there's a fairy, is it usually a tennis ball on a stick. Or sometimes our special effects guy makes these printouts on big sticks.
There's always a stick involved.
This was way worse, actually. We actually just said, just tell us where to look, because we were actually laughing at it. We had this giant ogre that he had printed out on a big stick and was running behind us. And I was like, I can imagine the ogre so much better than I can look at that and try to not laugh.
Is this throwing you off? Please.
And it was just a picture of Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, nice. Good pull. Yeah, that was really good. That was a really good pull. Did you watch a lot of... What kind of stuff did you like when you were growing up? Like movies and...
Well, you know, we weirdly were sheltered from a lot of stuff because... I don't really know why. My parents just weren't really super into pop culture-y kind of things. Mm-hmm. They were, like I said, they were both teachers, so we were really lucky to be exposed to classical music and some of the old musicals and things. It was like I was raised in the 50s. It's so bizarre. Like the references that I have from my childhood were all
you
things.
You going to the sock hop? What?
We had sock hops. I went to sock hops in my socks so that we didn't ruin the gym floor. That's why they were sock hops.
I didn't know that. Is that true?
So the shoes didn't ruin the gym floor.
I just thought the 50s were dumb. Like, I didn't know they were like, you could just wear shoes to that. No,
they didn't want to repolish the gym floor.
Makes sense now.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was pretty much my childhood. I didn't really start to have a sense of real pop culture until college. So I was like inundated all of a sudden with pop music and alternative music and all these movies I'd never seen. I'd never, literally never seen most of the major classic movies besides, you know, Annie.
Sure.
Which is a big classic.
Yeah, of course.
Annie the Musical.
Why did they want to show that stuff to you?
I don't know that they didn't want to. It was, you know, there was a certain element of that till a certain age of wanting to protect us from things. And, oh, you can only see G-rated things until we were probably 12 or 13 or something like that. But then after that.
And then hard R.
Like right, yeah. We just went right for it. We went for like triple X right after that. It was just not in the house. I don't think it was intentional, or it wasn't like I felt like I wasn't allowed to. They would have been fine with it. It just wasn't around. So it wasn't in the culture of our family at that point. So it was just weird that I had this very insular kind of upbringing, and then once I got to college, was just discovered. I read a lot of plays and stuff. I think a lot of my points of reference to things were novels and plays, and literature was my direct connection to feeling like connected to things. I said connect a lot there, but
no, that's all right. You connected all the words with connect.
Yeah, thanks. But I feel super connected.
But I feel like it makes sense that if your parents are teachers. And they have, in that case, they had very little interest in pop culture. It probably just didn't occur to them. Like,
right.
Oh, we should show her Caddyshack.
No, it just didn't come up. It wasn't a rule or a regulation. It just didn't come up. So, I feel like I'm always catching up in that department. Recently, I've been really on it about watching movies as much as possible and catching up on the classics and going through people's lists of the top 100 and trying to make sure I've seen as many of those as possible and going through some of my favorite directors and watching their movies in order or rewatching some of them in order and watching how they like developed as filmmakers and things like that. But it's in a weird way, at first it used to be frustrating and now I feel like I get to continue enjoying discovering those things. Yeah. Whereas it wasn't like I just knew all about it and then was like, oh, yeah, I saw that. I had such a different reaction to 16 Candles or Ferris Bueller's Day Off or movies like that because I watched them in college going, oh, my God, I didn't know these existed, you know?
Yeah, wow.
So I always got to discover things at different times, I guess on my own terms, which was fun.
You wouldn't have known what this is, the Chris's Notebook thing, huh?
This is a Wookiee skin, although... I think actually it's probably Ewok skin disguised to look as Wookiee skin.
Well, because it's illegal.
Do you have anything written in there?
It's way easier.
I mean, what do you keep in your Wookiee book?
Yeah. Nothing yet. I just got it.
Oh.
Sorry.
That makes me feel better about my imitation of Chewbacca. I'm just saying.
Which is what?
Which we're not doing again.
I don't know. I feel like we should.
No. It was a one-time thing. I was doing an interview at Comic-Con last year where they forced all of us to do Chewbacca impressions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-time thing.
Well, I think
you
our studio audience
it.
Would want to hear that. Don't you guys want to hear it? Don't you guys want to...
a lot of shit about it. And now I feel like it kind of sounds like your notebook. So I feel a little bit better about my impersonation.
Yes, this is from the film George Lucas's The Notebook. Rachel McAdams and Chewbacca.
That is kind of how he felt in it, though. He was always just kind of like,
yeah, exactly. He just wanted someone to
love me. Yeah. I've loved you for so long.
It turns out Han Solo had no idea what he was saying because the whole time she was just going, "Why don't you love me? I know, I know."
Stop it.
Yeah, fix the
crazy
thing.
Bag of fur. Get out of here.
Understand my words.
They hurt when you call me a carpet.
Like, they just couldn't ever make it. I think. Someone making a video of Chewbacca's unrequited love, I think, would be so brilliant.
It's pretty amazing.
And at the very end, he just sort of coughs up a hairball, and he's like, "I've loved you this whole time." Like, he just couldn't talk the whole time. Because
actually, it was Trevor Moore from The Whitest Kids did a thing where he did subtitles for Chewbacca. He acted like it was a special edition Star Wars thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like the whole time, he's just like spoiling like the movie for everybody. It's just like it's like hey, that's it looks like a moon. And he's like, "No, it's not a moon. It's a space station, and it's like owned by that dude's dad."
But no one understands.
No one understands what he's saying.
That's genius.
And when Leia and Luke kiss, he's like, "Oh," it's like his reaction is perfect because it's like, "Whoa, dude, that's your sister." I don't think he ever put it online. He just showed it at a show once.
Oh, he should put that up. That sounds really funny.
So you loved 16 Candles, you loved the John Hughes movies.
Yeah, those were all good.
That'd have been a great time to be in. I feel like that would have been a great.
Yeah, right? That whole time in film was just so fun. And the 70s too, things like Annie Hall and all, that kind of period with film, Scarface, all that stuff too.
And Annie.
And Annie is what I saw over and over again. I could sing It's a Hard Knock Life.
I saw that for some reason. I remember seeing that movie a lot as a kid.
I feel like it ran on PBS a lot. Maybe they did a version of it.
There's a new one coming out.
There is a new one, but I mean the one that was done like with Albert Finney and Aidan Quinn. Am I pulling that name out of my ass correctly?
I'm thinking I don't know if it's that one.
Is it the late 70s one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe that's
Daddy Warbucks. Who doesn't want a Daddy Warbucks? I mean, come on.
Well, I don't know. The story of Annie is a little. He's kind of. I know he warms up to her, but he's essentially like a robber baron.
He loves her right away. I mean, he just doesn't know how to express his feelings.
He's a crazy industrialist, probably.
Yeah, we all know how he got his money. War. Bucks.
Yes.
Profiteering.
Shit. That never occurred to me.
Secret wars.
I mean, trail of
you
bodies.
Just ruined Annie.
You know, he adopted one orphan to make up for the thousands of orphans he created. So it was a whole.
All right, forget it.
The backstory.
We also watched Gigi a lot. Do you have any issues with Gigi?
Manservant. He has a manservant. I mean, just like on a humanitarian level. That guy would never be allowed to exist today.
Yeah, that was
name bad. Some more. Let's keep on ruining stuff.
I want to see where like Annie grows up and she becomes like a tough as nails. Like, nah, fuck him. You know, like played by Joan Crawford. You know, just that.
But used to be just a poor girl too. Fuck that. Yeah. I crawled my way out of the mud.
Now I'm not. Kill him.
I walked 157th Street.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I don't know if it was that.
Now
scene
you on. Polish that floor like it shines like the top of the Chrysler Building. Bitch.
Stop fucking singing.
Stop singing. We could just talk about things. Yeah. We don't have to musically express the subtext of our feelings.
Oh God.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think. Did you ever do musicals?
I did. Yeah. I played Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady, which was probably the most fun I had. And then we did The King and I. So I played the teacher in The King and I. I'm trying to think of other. I didn't do a ton of musicals. I was in show choir, which was another whole experience.
What was that? Now, I was not a choir kid, but I had friends who were choir kids. What was the experience like?
There was a lot of singing and then holding hands and like little circles at the end and talking about our experience. I don't know. It was very, I don't know.
Culty?
Looking back, it was a little weirdly culty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I avoid gratitude circles to this day because of that.
She doesn't know what's going to happen at the end of the show.
Yeah. Are we all going to hold hands?
Just hold hands and
say what we're grateful
talk
for.
About other things.
I like the idea in theory. It's just that I've been in enough of them now that I feel suspicious of them.
What's their angle?
Yeah.
What did I just join?
I just feel that way about overly nice people. Like, it's like I have an adverse reaction where I go, what are you trying to do?
What do you want from me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Relax.
All I want you to do is just cut the palm of your hand and hold my hand.
Oh, okay. We're good.
Just grip it. I know. I'm probably just a really bad person for feeling that way, but show choir was fun. It was one of those things that as much as I can tease about it, it really was a great experience in high school. It's always nice to feel like you're a part of a team. You know, obviously it's not a sports team, but you feel like you're a part of a group of people that are all working toward a common
vocal
goal.
Vocal sports, you know, that you're exercising muscles.
Vocal
that is very
sports,
you have
exactly.
to have athletic vocal cords in order
that
to
is true.
Sustain that.
That actually is true. And then you'd have dance rehearsals and we'd go on like trips all together. You know, it was fun. It was definitely really fun. And you get to perform all this fun music, and it was. I definitely am glad that that was a part of my teenage years.
Yeah, my least favorite part about doing plays in high school was the other people doing plays. I was just such an oddball in a group.
You
of
were
oddballs.
The oddball amongst the oddballs.
Yeah, and I just kind of like they would all go hang out afterwards and be like, "I'm good."
What was that picture you posted on Instagram the other day? It was a throwback picture. It was like little chubby Jonah sitting out in front of something.
Was it me? It was like on a little like horsey thing, like one of those little kid toys. Yeah, that was me outside of Daiei Market in Hawaii.
What was that? What was the context of that?
Me and my friend got disposable cameras had just come out, or maybe we just had one of us got a 35mm point and shoot, and we just would run around town just bored and just
shoot
dumb pictures or put the timer on and like try and
just
jump
basically
in.
What we all do on our phones now.
Yeah. It's funny. I was going. I've been going through a bunch of them, and we were just bored and we would just take dumb pictures. Like one from the throwback from the week before was like we were in a thrift store and I found two different Where's Waldo dolls. And like I took a picture of them where I'm going like yeah like holding both of them, and then some guy is like that's like it's so funny how much of a dork you are, you're so excited you found those dolls. I was like no, I was still a funny kid. I thought it'd be funny if someone was that excited about finding two Where's Waldos
right
at the same time.
You were self-aware
of the decision.
Yeah, the worst part is when people go that's so brave that you take the, you post those pictures of you. Like I go what do you mean they're
well,
like
you look like you, shit like you're an obnoxious
horrible.
Looking child.
Yeah,
like,
I'm
surprised you would share that with the world.
Exactly. I go but that's not what I look like anymore. And like it's just so brave. It's like
Brave.
And I ask people if they live their lives like trying to hide their childhood. Like it's like, are you ashamed of the way you looked as a kid?
Yeah.
What now if we were to look back at the Jennifer Morrison yearbooks, what would we see if we're flipping pages? Like let's go 8 through 12 grade. What would we see?
Oh, 8 to 12. I don't know. I didn't.
Were you a good kid?
I was a good kid. I was probably too good of a kid. I wish I had sort of made some more trouble at that age.
Yeah, me too.
But my dad taught at my high school. It was just, there were a lot of complicated factors. You know, my dad was my marching band director. He had a nationally competitive high school marching band for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is intense. It's like if you imagine Best in Show, but not dogs, but marching band, it's that. You know, it's like a really intense world where. And there really are amazing things about it. I can't, you know, I can tease, like I said, sort of about show choir too, but like, you know, there's things you can sort of tease about it, but the reality is like, it was really formative in my life and I don't regret it at all, but.
It's cool. I saw Drumline. It's really rad.
It's different than that, but yeah, my dad was my marching band director. My parents were always around at school. I don't know. I was really worried about missing out on anything. I really wanted to do everything, so I kind of overdid everything. And so then I was just like a busy kid. And I definitely chilled out more in college. College was when I was like, all right, I'm focused on doing theater and I can just chill and have fun.
Is it hard to date in high school when your parents are around all the time? Are people afraid of you because your parents are teachers?
It wasn't helpful. But not to any fault of theirs. I was kind of a late bloomer in that department. I didn't really understand any of it. I actually remember, I don't even know if I've ever told this story publicly, but I remember being a freshman and having to work really hard to be able to go over to this guy's house I think his name was Frank Stark. And so we, yeah, Frank Stark. So, and I had such a crush on him. I thought he was so cute. He was so handsome, whatever. And I really wanted to go over, and he invited me over, and I was all excited, but I had pep band. So then I had to get out of, figure out how I was going to get from pep band to Frank Stark's house. And it was like this whole, you know, like it was this whole like thing of negotiating with my parents, and were his parents going to be home, and weren't they going to be home? This whole thing. So I do finally somehow negotiate my way to Frank Stark's house. I'm so excited to be there. And he had it in his house. It was like set up the downstairs. There was like his bedroom was in the downstairs basement area, and then there was also like a hangout room. So it was like in the hangout room, and these two other people were like making out in his room. I was like, oh wow, this is so crazy. And I mean, this was way above my head at 14. I was like, wow. And so then those people came out, and he's like, hey, I want to show you my fish tank. And like, I just believed him. I was
never
like,
never look at the fish tank.
And I went in and I looked at the fish tank, and we talked about the fish, and we were in there for a while, and I did not, it never occurred to me that this guy was trying to figure out a way to kiss me. Never occurred to me. I'm not kidding you. It wasn't until years later I was telling the story, and I went, oh my God. Oh God.
You blew it.
I totally blew it.
With Frank Stark.
I did. I really liked him. So he probably doesn't even know that. I don't even know where he is or what he's doing anymore. But
there's years later when whenever you did actually make out with a guy, and then you're like, well, "Where's your fish tank?" Like you just like that's part of the thing is you got to see the fish tank first.
It just never occurred to me. I just thought, wow, he really likes fish.
So was it? I don't understand. So were you supposed to make the move? Because it sounds like he didn't. He sounds like he didn't make the move.
Listen, well, he tried. He got her in the room.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of like if I had maybe gotten closer to him and gave him a chance. I was so in over my head. Really was completely, totally clueless. I didn't end up making out with anyone until I was 17.
So you're like, you're supposed to go, those are some really sweet guppies.
Yeah, you start making out with the fish tank.
Right.
And then, do you see what the fish are doing? Do you see what the fish are doing?
Yes. Yes. I should have learned.
Yeah, I'm just going to put some fish food in here, and then you just sort of, like, if anything grips you. Sure.
Tragic.
You think a guy with a cool name like Frank Stark would have more game.
Wait, he was very cool. He really was.
How can you not be with that name?
He was very cool.
Sweet fish tank. He had a fish tank in his room. That's pretty freaking cool there.
Yeah, and his bedroom is in the basement next to like a cool hangout area.
That's really cool.
It was pretty cool.
Can you remember the first time you made out with someone? I was trying to remember the first time I made out with someone, and I think it was just so long ago that I have traces of it, but I don't know if I actually
do remember my first kiss, yeah, but it was weirdly sort of stolen, but I think it needed to be, clearly, because I was totally...
Someone just kicked the fish tank over. I'm like, come here.
Sure, what was going on? Some guy from student council. This is making me sound so cool. Some guy from student council, don't remember his name.
All right.
He was from, from the state student council, not from school, from the state student council. And he came over to watch a movie. And then when he was leaving, he just kind of kissed me. And I was like, oh, weird. That's what that is. Okay. And then that happened. And then.
What do you remember what movie you watched?
I have no idea.
Annie.
Yeah, exactly. Probably. Hey, do you want to come over and watch Annie?
Oh, sure. The sexiest movie of all.
It's this musical about an orphan.
Well, yeah. When I remember when I was growing up, it was the key word was, hey, do you want to come over and watch a movie? Meant let's make out on the couch.
Yeah. Well, I figured that out by my senior year. Junior year, I guess. I kind of had a boyfriend my junior year, but. Yeah, I caught up a little bit.
I think it'd be a fun way to continue into our adult dating lives of just asking people if they want to come watch a movie or look at a fish tank and just see. Because I feel like the right person would totally get it.
Yeah.
And then that's the person that you actually want to date.
Yeah.
You know? Not someone to be like, why the fuck would I look at a fish tank?
Well, I think that's true. You know, when you know those references in someone's life or you have a personal little inside joke with someone, that's always the best.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have your own little world with them, your little things you can reference and feel special together.
Are you pretty internet-y at all? Do you like to...
I depends on the day. I do well with it for a little bit, and then I panic and I leave for a while, and then I come back and I
like publicly. Do you set up like a Twitter account and then go, I don't want to do this
anymore? No. I don't ever do that. I mean, I always have the Twitter account. I just, when I'm working, I'm better about it because there's sort of consistently more things to post because I'm pretty careful about being private about my private life.
Sure.
So I don't put a lot of personal photos up and things like that. But when I'm doing, you know, when we're in the midst of filming Once Upon a Time, there'll be fun behind the scenes photos or something that'll happen that feels like, oh, this will be fun to share with the fans, and then it'll be a nice thing. And then we'll do like Ask Jen at certain milestones of Twitter followers, and then I'll do like live tweeting during the shows on the weekends sometimes. It just depends on my schedule, if I'm traveling or if I'm not traveling or if I'm around or whatever. I've just been kind of bad about it since we wrapped 3 weeks ago and for this season. And I just think I get so inundated with it while I'm doing it for 9 months. And then I sort of was just like, okay, I just take a breath, you know? But then it's also fun because I feel like I'm also rediscovering things that I can start to share with people again and be able to connect with them again. On my Facebook page, I do a book of the week and a movie of the week, usually. I'm on hiatus right now, but when I'm not on hiatus, and it is a book that I read that week and a movie that I'd seen that week. So it's always consistent with what I've actually...
That's cool.
Do you... So it is possible... You know, it's funny. I don't even... I post so much shit to everything that I don't even think like, oh, maybe this should not... Maybe I should not post these things and be a little...
Maybe if I were less sensitive, it would be fine. I think that I'm sort of... trying to be realistic with myself about the things I can handle and what I can't handle.
Sure.
You know, so, and I know, yeah, I'm a fairly sensitive person. I do my best not to take the bad stuff too personally and try to ignore it the best I can. But, you know, sometimes it just backs up on you and you're like, okay.
Yeah. You win.
Yeah,
I'm crushed by the weight of the internet.
I'm so ugly and everything I wear is terrible.
You win, internet. But you know, just so you know that's, there's always a counterpoint to everything on the internet.
Of course.
And usually
yeah.
it's not real. And a lot of times those people are just actually fans who are like spoiled children who are just trying to get your attention.
Yeah, and I've realized that. And that's the thing is like I also don't want to penalize the people who are really nice over the couple people that are being jerks, you know. So, you know, there's so many people that are so sweet. And especially with Once Upon a Time, I've been really blown away. There's been huge groups of friends that have started because of this show. People that met online and they meet together to watch the show or they will watch it together through whatever live streaming, whatever they watch it together through and they get together and plan trips together. And so all these interesting relationships and friendships have started because of the show. And I think that's so awesome. That's such a positive thing to come out of a television show. So I always want to try to give back and support those people. Cause I feel like they're just like the really fun fans that really love it. And that's why we do it. You know, we want people to enjoy it every week. We certainly don't want them to be miserable every week.
And you also probably get the sweet perk where you can just go to Disneyland wherever you want. And they just give you like an awesome guide. We went to Disneyland once with Nathan Fillion, and because he's on an ABC show,
you get the silver pass.
It is one
you
of
get
the best
guide.
Perks.
You get a guide, and they basically just take you around, and it's fucking sweet.
Yeah, it's really
like,
different.
There's no other way to. You get spoiled.
Yeah, sure. You don't have to wait in line. It's kind of amazing. It is one of the most like extravagant perks of being on ABC.
Oh yeah, that makes sense because even friends that I've had that like had PA jobs at like ABC or on an ABC show, they get silver passes, which is like you can bring. Like once a week, you can bring you and three people, which is like that's just for a guy that's getting coffee.
But they still have to wait in line.
They still have to wait in line. That's true.
Yeah.
But like that's like a good starting off point.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It really is. It's like a nice perk of working for that company for sure. And
I would go every weekend.
It's fun. It's definitely really fun. And it's something that's really fun for me to be able to take my family to do because they do love Disney and really enjoy it. So for them to be able to experience it fully behind the scenes like that and see behind everything.
Do you have to let them know you're coming or do you show up and they go, we'll get someone for you?
Yeah, you arrange it and then they find, you can request a tour guide.
Oh,
like
cool.
Jennifer Goodwin is a Disney obsessed, loves Disney, and she has her favorite tour guide. Like she, you know, whenever I go, I just do whatever she does. I'm like, I'm sure you've worked it out. I'm sure you have the best option possible. I'll just do that. But yeah, you get a tour guide assigned to you, and you just go around. And you get to see Disney's apartment.
What's your favorite ride?
I would probably say either Splash Mountain or Space Mountain.
Nice.
Space Mountain
Very
was like
rides.
The big one when I was a kid, where you would just like.
Space Mountain!
So excited to be on Space Mountain.
Yeah. Space Mountain was amazing because when I used to go as a kid, Space Mountain and the Matterhorn are basically the same ride.
Okay, Matterhorn is painful.
I don't like Matterhorn.
Yeah, it hurts.
It hurts a lot.
It's just
painful. Yeah.
But it's the same concept. It's like a toboggan ride where they drop you at the top and then you just kind of spiral down. But they made Space Mountain comfy.
Yeah.
And then the Matterhorn still feels like it was built in the 30s.
I think I literally had bruises last time. Yeah. I was like, this is not made for little people.
Because you get thrown around and you can't predict.
You're banging on the walls. It's like your backbone is seeing.
It's not too fun for tall people either. It's
that's gotta be terrible.
Like my knees are like up to my chest and just like, yeah, it's the worst.
But Space Mountain's fun because it always feels like, and I know this is not the case, but it always feels like you're going to get decapitated because you can see like everything hangs really. It looks
and
like
it's so dark.
Yeah. And it just feels like my head could come off. This is so exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would really be exciting, but
well, you wouldn't. I mean,
you wouldn't know.
Can you imagine that? That's what I. You know what I want to do is I think it'd be really fun to hack the photo wall coming out of a ride and then just take people's heads off and just put like weird ghosts and shit in the background and just people, oh, let's go to the Jesus Christ,
just terrify people on their
that
way
would
out.
That would be awesome.
That would be really good.
I'm sure
that would be a good April Fool's or Halloween joke or something.
That would be amazing.
They should do that.
What's your favorite ride?
My favorite ride, I do love Splash Mountain as a ride. You know, the Haunted House, there's something about the Haunted Mansion where it's just that the Thor, whatever his name was, there is this room, actually, the guy who did all the voiceovers for Disney. That and the vibe of it and the feeling of it, and it just feels real good.
The location of it is nice,
really
too.
Really ahead of its time in terms of the special effects, special effects that it uses in order to accomplish it.
All the glass and the window.
That's all normal now, but it wasn't normal then. That was really revolutionary.
And I am so happy that they did update it to a degree, but I am so happy that they left the original practical effects The Nemo ride was basically like, let's just put some... The what?
Nemo ride?
The Nemo ride.
You always, every time you say Nemo, you do the Albert Brooks.
Oh.
Nemo!
There you go.
Sorry. So... But they basically just put, like, you know, CG fish in the window. And it's like, I get it. You know, it's cool. But
like
the
fish on a track.
Buzz Lightyear's pretty fun.
It's the funnest ride because it's like a game, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the most the activity, and then the Toy Story ride in Tomorrowland and California Adventure is pretty fantastic, and the Cars ride is great too.
Cars. I forgot about Cars. That's a newer one. Yeah,
that one's good. Great. Indiana Jones is
Tower of Terror.
That's a good one too.
Pretty Tower of Terror is pretty
great. We're basically all just saying Disney's pretty rad.
Yeah,
and then Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Yeah,
it's always
the
longest fucking line outside of Peter Pan.
And it's not the best ride.
It's not the best ride. I think it's just because you're in a boat, and when you take off, that initial takeoff over London,
The miniatures.
Yeah, the miniatures are great, but it's just that feeling of there's still some traces of like proto Disney left, where it was like the beginnings of Disneyland, and you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I think initially it was just like a glorified petting zoo.
Also, I mean, even things like, well, the World Fair was really huge. I can't remember what year it was in, but they originally were going to do Pirates of the Caribbean as a walkthrough exhibit. It was all going to just be miniature things that you walk through and see. And then they went to the World Fair that year and animatronics. It was the first time that animatronics had been presented. And Disney was like, screw that, we're doing this.
Oh, wow. That's probably one of my favorites.
Everything.
Yeah. When Pirates of the Caribbean is probably my favorite. Just because it's so cold and dark and quiet. And
I don't even mind that they added
I don't mind at all. It actually gives it like a through line now.
A little bit of a through line.
Yeah. It's just if I could just live where the Blue Bayou restaurant is and there's
a
guy playing, you know, the banjo, like I just want to live in that.
It's kind of nice over there. And the tree house. Isn't the tree house?
Yeah, it's right there.
I always thought it'd be cool to live in a tree house.
Do you ever get to go to the Club 33?
I've gone once.
Damn it!
Because of Jennifer Goodwin. she, like I said, is obsessed. There's some crazy wait list. There's like a lifelong wait list.
Oh, yeah. Thing. And it's expensive.
And it's very expensive.
Yeah.
And she somehow, because she had been on the wait list and been on the wait list forever, and I don't know what happened, but she finally got called and she's like, yeah, I'm absolutely in. And she paid for the membership and the whole thing. So for my mom's 60th birthday last year, I did the whole take them on the tour and have the tour guide and, you know, don't have to wait in lines and all that stuff. And then we had dinner at Club 33.
Oh, man. Was it good?
It was really good.
Oh,
it was really good.
You know, I found the food. I was just there a couple weeks ago during WonderCon and the food was really good. Like in the park, the food was really, really good.
Really?
Yeah.
But did I tell you I got to go to that clothing line, the Hundreds, had an event where it was after the park closed and they sectioned off all of Tomorrowland for just guests.
Oh, that's cool.
Like the company. So yeah. It's like, it was just not very many people just getting to hang out and party and go on all the rides with just Tomorrowland.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's really great.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I feel like Disney without the crowds would be really magical. Yes. You know, it's so, I understand that the crowds are part of it and the whole thing, obviously, and it means that.
Now, let's be honest, they get in the way a lot of the time. It'd be nice to just have the run of the park.
Every time I'm in Disney World, this is what I think. I look around and I see all the kids and I'm like, oh my God, everyone's having sex. everyone has sex. So look kids? At all these kids.
Yeah, yeah, like, because kids are basically.
Everyone's having sex.
Kids are sex trophies.
And you just don't want to think about it. And then you're there and you go, God, everyone here is having sex.
Yeah.
Like all these children.
Yeah. And then a lot of times it looks like they regretted it.
Well,
you see a lot of annoyed parents like,
have some more cotton candy.
Yeah, yeah. Just stop it.
Just shut up, please.
But I wouldn't change a thing for the world. It's my little baby.
I don't have kids, so I don't know if that's true or not yet.
I don't know if it's true or not.
No, I don't have kids.
But everybody says that, right? They're like, complain, and they're like, but it's the best thing I ever did.
No,
like,
because if
they have to say that
because they would be monsters if they didn't.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
If you like talked about how, it'd be so irritating to have kids, and then you had a kid and you still said that, no one would be your friend.
But they all seem like they mean it.
Or if someone said, you know, I never thought I was someone who would like kids, and it turns out I'm still not. A mistake. And now I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Now I'm just 18-year-old
prison
sentence.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that.
A prison without walls. I don't know how to get out of it. Yeah. Just going to take the kids to Disneyland and hope they run away.
Yeah. Kids are awesome.
I do know people who've been crotchety about kids and they still maintain like, I don't know what it is. I'm still annoyed by other kids, but my kids, I'm totally bonded to.
Which I kind of get having a dog because I sometimes feel that way with dogs. Not, you know, some dogs are great, but there's times where I'm like, oh, you're really drooly and you're on my lap and licking my face and you're just not mine, you know? But if it were my dog, I'm like, oh God, if I need to like clean its poop out of its fur, I don't even think twice about it.
Yeah, that's true. A dog's not going to projectile shit on your chest, and a baby would.
That's true.
Because they're selfish. they know what they're doing. I'm on to you, babies.
Or helpless.
What?
Helpless?
I don't know.
Maybe?
I don't know. I think I'm a monster.
We've come to the conclusion that it's a good thing you don't have kids.
What are you
so
talking
far?
About? It's fine. Shut up. You're fine. Walk it off. You can't walk yet. Crawl it off.
Dear me.
Crawl
Chris
it
hurt
off.
Me today.
Is that the diary writing to itself?
Yes, sorry.
Okay, I got the.
Yeah, it was
I got
a bit
the,
of a jump.
No, it was good. I liked it.
Are we going to witness the first diary entrance and into the Chewbacca book?
Or the first diarrhea exit?
It's been in your mouth? Kyle's kind of like having a dog. So,
it's all right.
Dear.
Shut up. I already shouldn't have kids. So.
Dear, shut up.
I just crossed out shut up.
I feel like I need a picture of this.
Dear Chewy, you'll never guess whom I met today. Jennifer Morrison.
All right, I'm tweeting that. Speaking of Twitter.
Biggest Annie fan in the world and fish tank aficionado.
I feel so honored that I am on the first page of this book.
That should be good. That should just be the posted picture for this podcast. Just that. That's the description.
And was fantastic.
Well, we're not done yet.
What? Oh, yeah, we still have a few minutes left.
She still has a few minutes to fuck it all up.
Scrape.
I'm about to screw it all up. It's about to happen.
Now, you'll have to sign the first entry, too.
I will. This is very fun. I like this.
I want this to be my stand-up notebook, but I just don't know if... Every time I do that, I think...
Why don't you just have the people you host on the podcast leave you little notes in there? And save
Dude,
it.
It's a guest book.
Yeah.
That's the best...
Have a Chewbacca guest book.
Wow, you're smarter.
You're gonna remember it every time?
What?
You're gonna remember it every time?
Yeah, I will. And
or like leave it in here.
Yes.
That's a great idea.
Is there anything in this drawer?
And then people will be like, dude, did you get to sign the book? It's
God. That is such a great idea.
And then when it's all filled up, sell it for charity.
That's a great idea. Not for kids though, right?
God, no.
Okay, good.
For dogs at Disneyland.
You just mean like bros who need like a new sound system or something, right? That kind of charity?
Oh my God.
One of your friends that wants to get their car lowered.
Here's my prediction. Maybe this is not a prediction. But I think Tomorrowland might end up just being Star Wars themed.
Really? Oh,
wow. That's a good point.
That's kind of exciting.
Did I read that or did you?
That and Marvel.
Well, oh, that Marvel?
LA, they're doing a lot of Marvel stuff, and then they're doing it Star Wars Land in the MGM park in Florida.
Mm. Really?
Finding Nemo's closed now.
It is?
They
already closed.
Wow, that was
because they had the fake fish.
Maybe that's probably what it was.
They should call me. I'll tell them how to make the fish tank
because
sing
you've
real.
Already saw. You've already added a tremendous amount of special.
Do you guys know about this traveling Marvel exhibit that's going to happen? This is so cool. So this is so random how this happened, but I actually just shot a short film, and when I was location scouting for it, next door to where I was shooting, there's this huge warehouse, and you would never know anything was going on. It was in Valencia, in the middle of nowhere, basically. And the woman who was renting the space to me, she's like, "Do you know about this exhibit?" I was like, "No." And she took me over there, and they're building this unbelievable traveling exhibit where all of the major Marvel characters are involved in the exhibit, but it's interactive. So you can do things like, oh God, I don't think I can tell you. I just realized.
How could you start that and not finish then?
I just realized I signed a non-disclosure. I don't think I can tell you about it.
Yeah. Can you not say anything about it?
No, I mean, I think you can know that it exists. They're going to, because they're opening in like Memorial Day in New York, right?
Even if it's interactive, you can tell us that?
I think so.
To be safe?
Yes.
Okay, so I can't tell you past that. I'll have to come back and talk to you about it after sometime.
Oh, man!
But I will just say, I mean, I was just seeing it in the building phases, and it's amazing. Like, this is going to change everything, because it's going to go from museum to museum around the world, so it's built in a way that it can adjust to different museum spaces. But, like, I really think, you know, we're in a time where kids do want to interact with things, and in order to get kids exposed to art and different kinds of cultural things, mm-hmm. it's going to need to be engaging in a particular way. And this, I think, is going to change everything. I literally spent like 2 hours going through it with the guys who designed it, and it was mind-boggling.
That's really cool.
It was
Holy
so
shit.
Cool.
But let's talk for a second. Did you direct a short film?
I did.
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay.
I mean, that sounds like that is quite an achievement.
Yeah, it's been really fun and exciting. It's called Warning Labels, and we shot it 2 weekends ago. I got the fucking best actors ever, Josh Lawson, Karen Gillan, Rose McGyver, and Eric Christian Olsen.
I know Karen very well.
Do you know Karen?
Of course I do.
Karen.
I just did Mrs. Doubtfire. Karen.
That was...
Hello.
Yeah, so anyway, they were amazing. My friend Janelle Riley wrote the script, and I don't know, I've been wanting to kind of branch out into directing, and I really liked the material, and so we just did it. We got the money together, we got everybody together, we got an incredible crew together. We had a very ambitious first day where we had to shoot 4 people in a diner for 9 pages.
Oh shit.
So we had 12 hours to do that. But we did it. And I just sat and watched all the footage with the editor the other day. And he was like, "You covered the shit out of this scene." I was like, "Thank God."
Good.
You know, guys, so I literally spent the whole day being like, "We gotta go, we gotta go. I love you, but we gotta go." You know, I was like running around like this huge cheerleader all day. But I wanted to get all the setups. And so it was a great learning experience, and it's probably why I was going back and watching all those films and all the directors that I really liked, and I really saw this as my chance to sort of go to film school in a sense, you know. So I wanted to explore all the things that I loved and just try them out, knowing that hopefully I will evolve from there and do probably
learn by doing.
Yeah, evolved in the future. But for now, you know, I pulled things that were some of the most memorable shots that I loved from movies, and then did my own variation on that to serve the storytelling. And I really tried to build a visual way of telling the story within the actors telling the story. And so it was a really great experience. And I was surrounded by just such great people. I was so grateful to have everybody involved doing it, because they loved it and were passionate about it. And so now I'm just waiting for the editor to do his cut, and then I'll go in and mess around with it a little bit.
Nice.
And,
Do you prefer that where you're director, you are engaged for the entire shoot?
Yeah.
But as an actor, you probably go sit in your trailer for a while. Like,
tired.
So is there one that you prefer?
I like both for different reasons. You know, it was funny because everybody kept telling me there was going to be something that I hated about the day that I would never anticipate. They're like, "Oh, the time's going to fly so much faster than you realize." And I was like, "I don't know. I'm pretty aware of how fast time flies even when I'm working as an actor. I'm very aware of like, oh God, the setup's really taking a while." Or I just tend to think that way anyway. What I hated that I didn't anticipate to hate was lunch.
You get so close.
Yeah. As an actor, I'm like, oh, it's lunch. I can go to my trailer. I can get away from everybody. I can lay down. You know, it's just like, ah. And I want lunch to be as long as possible as an actor. As a director, I paced in circles like a rabid animal for the entire 37 minutes that we were on lunch. You know, I was like, I kept looking at my watch being like, how many more minutes?
And chew faster. Chew. Yeah. Chew your fucking food. Chew faster.
Yeah, and Andrew's like, 16 minutes. I was like, but that person's done eating. He's like, but they're still on lunch. But when you know you have one day in a location and everything's riding on that one day, and I was like, okay, I know we've got to turn around and we've got extra shots that also have to be added to the other side, and we have to get this actor up by 11 p.m. and then the sun's gonna go down by this time. You know, you're thinking about all the logistics. So anyway, yeah, I hated lunch, but as an actor, I'm like, oh, lunch, great. I'm gonna go take.
When
it
does
out.
This come? When do you finish with this?
Soon. I'm hoping to. The editor will have his cut on May 25th ish, and then I'm gonna sit with him in the editing room for like a week ish and sort of adjust things. We have some decisions to make based on. Stylistically, just there's the story involves that in the world we establish, everyone wears a warning label. So it's as if we all just had labels that, and the universe assigns it to you. So it's just like, it's just the truth.
It's just part of who you are.
Exactly.
Right.
That's cool. So, you know, like someone's label says, like, I'm not over my ex, you know, and someone's warning label is like, warning danger ahead, but has all this fine print. You know, you can't quite read the fine print. And so everybody has different warning labels, and the concept behind it is just that it just shows up when a new one shows up when it changes, right? So the world we're in, it's totally normal for everybody in that world, but obviously the audience is experiencing this world with warning labels for the first time. So I'm going to have some decisions to make about exactly how heightened I want that to be or not be.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so we have several different ideas about ways we want to try it, but it's going to mean the editing process is a little more tricky than just putting together a scene, you know?
Yeah, but like, you know, with the show on the Once Upon a Time, like, you deal with trying to ground, like, you know, like, crazy things all the time. So that must have come in a lot when you were.
Yeah, and that's what
this.
The editor and I were talking about, because actually the editor I'm using is one of the editors from Once Upon a Time, which is great. And so we were talking about that, because he was sort of saying, well, should we subtitle it or should we do this or do that? And I was like, well, I just kind of want it to feel like it's so normal that it's normal for us too. But I also don't want it to be so normal that you can't read everybody's labels or you know what I mean? Because I don't know, especially with it being a short film that is going to be submitted to festivals and things, like, I don't know if someone's going to watch it on their laptop or their 70-inch screen or on a big screen. You know, I know it would screen at the festival on a big screen, but you don't know in the process, you know, how to adapt things, not knowing what medium it's going to be watched on.
Yeah, they could even be watching it on their phone because they're busy or
something.
Right,
it's actually totally possible now. That's the crazy thing. So so we have to try to figure out what that happy medium is going to be. But I'm excited about that. And we have some cool musical choices. My sister is an incredible singer and guitar player, and she's actually a music therapist. And she wrote a song for the movie that was incredible. So we just recorded that. A friend of mine that I play poker with did me a huge favor. She's just great producer, produces a lot of big pop artists. And she was like, oh, we'll record it. And I was like, holy cow. So I got to take my sister into the professional recording studio and work with real producers. And so they're putting that together right now. It's been a really, I don't know, it's been a really cool process.
So what happens, like, once you make it, do you enter it in festivals or you just try to, like, how do you get it seen?
Yeah, I mean, initially you enter it in festivals, and then it'll hopefully serve as two things. Hopefully it will show at festivals and people will see it, and also it'll be a calling card for me to be able to direct other things.
Yeah.
The directing of the short sort of was born out of one of the producers I worked with on Some Girls had come across a script called A Kind of Love Story that my friend Janelle Riley wrote, and he wanted to produce it. And she said, well, I've been developing this with Jen Morrison, and she sort of walked him through the process, and he was like, well, she should direct this because I had so extensively developed it with her. And initially that wasn't the plan. Initially I was developing it with her just because I liked the idea, and we were taking it from a stage play to a screenplay and thinking that I would maybe be in it. And then he came to me and said, well, we would love you to direct this. And I was like, can I screw up on like 10 minutes first instead of an hour and a half?
Yeah.
So then he came on board and built a producing team to produce the short with the plans of this being the calling card for the feature. So we used the same writer, built a team that we would theoretically take with us from the short to the feature, and then that way we have something to hand people that isn't exactly the same material, but it's similar in tone, it's a similar team, it's the same writer, and say like, hey, it's going to be along this you know, it'll be along these lines, basically. And if people like it and respond to it, then it's a reason for them to believe in me for the future.
It's such, and it also is just, I think it's just a, it's a, besides probably being very gratifying, it's just a smart career thing to do, because you know, there's no guarantee. I mean, you've worked very regularly for a long time, but I'm sure it's, you probably still feel like, I don't know, what if something crazy happens? What do I
know at all? And also, it's a way to create content and stay creatively engaged while I'm doing the same thing for a long time. And as much as I'm very lucky that Once Upon a Time is a show where the characters do evolve and they do grow and they have new adventures every week, it's not like a procedural where I'm doing exactly the same thing every week. I'm still playing Emma, and I think I'm pretty sure I know Emma better than I know myself. Just like by the end of 6 years, I definitely knew Cameron better than I knew myself. So you get to a point with that where you want to be creatively engaged in a way where it re-inspires the work you're doing every day. So that was also partly why I was really invested in doing something like this, was because I really wanted to feel like I was really excited every day that I came to work on Once Upon a Time and feeling like I had something new to offer. Mm-hmm. And for me, I just needed to like be fueling that with something else. And so to be engaged in the process on every level, instead of just looking at it from one character's perspective, has really changed how I look at pretty much everything I work on and how I connect with directors, how I connect with DPs and producers and all the crew. I mean, it's just a totally different relationship when you are forced to learn a little piece of their job or understand like the way they fit into the puzzle in a more specific way than before.
Well, yeah, because it's so easy to just get caught in your own head and your own experience. But then, of course, it's gonna be really funny if you're like, are you sure you don't want to go on a wide on that?
Yeah.
I feel like it would capture.
I don't ever do that.
What?
Me?
That's weird. It just sounds never. Like, okay, but your tone sounds like maybe you might.
Are you going to try and direct an episode of Once Upon a Time?
I don't know. It's something I think would need to be in my contract. You know, I think that stuff gets tricky. They always have the couple people that they like to work with over and over again. Sure. And also, you know, if they let me do it, then who else do they have to let do it and all that, you know? So there's a little bit of politics involved in all that. But I also feel like it might be a little too close to home. Mm-hmm. I feel okay with the route this is going. You know, Eric Christian Olsen was so sweet when we were working together. He was like, oh, let me know if you want to like do an NCIS or something. And, you know, he's like, I'll talk to them about it. So that might be, you know, that's just theoretical, but just saying like going the route of someone else's show actually might be a better, sometimes just, you know, when you come at something from a totally different perspective, it might be hard for everyone Once Upon a Time to take me seriously as a director when they're used to me being Emma every week. Whereas if I go into a totally new environment, that they would probably embrace it differently. And, you know, I don't know. It's just
didn't
my
he,
theory.
He, Laurie, did he direct Summer House?
He did an episode. I think he may have done more. I don't know if he did one or more, but I was in the one he directed, and I really enjoyed working with him as a director. It was the happiest I'd ever seen him. He was just so, I think maybe just thrilled to be in a position where he could really make judgment calls that he felt like were maybe out of his hands in other situations, or set things up in a really efficient way so that he had already thought through some of the, or troubleshot some of the things that maybe some of the other directors hadn't and things like that. So he obviously is just such a crazy talent that he would have great notes and great insights. And that was also fun, because when you've worked across from someone so much for so long, they have a connection to you to be able to be like, hey, think about the thing when such and such happened. Like, he knew every detail to be able to really give you an informed, specific note and really make you feel like you're seeing it from a new perspective and making it better. And he's just one of those people that I don't think there's anything he can't do. He's just crazy talented in every department.
Yeah. I mean, coming from the sort of the writer performer, creator performer background too, I would imagine it's probably this is one of the things that with acting, where I always think, they just have to stand where they tell you, and then you got to say what they want you to say, and then you somehow have to find a way to make that interesting to yourself or fun or challenging,
right.
Even if when you read it, you go, I don't know about that, but you still have to do it anyway.
You have to figure it out. It was funny because I realized how that was translating into how I was directing as well, because I've been put in situations so many times where you have to make the impossible seem possible. You know, it's like something on the page is very different than bringing it to life. And oftentimes when it's written, the writers don't know the location you're going to be in or the limitations of the location that you're in. And suddenly you're in the location. You're like, there's no way to walk from there to there with that one line, and then I have to drop the thing. And then I, you know, and like on our show, Colin O'Donoghue, who plays Hook, he's like, I have one hand. You know, like, they write for him like he's got two hands. He's like, I have one hand. You know,
it's in
like,
my name.
Things like that
it's
happen.
In my name.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Look, I'm not called two hands.
I'm so used to it being in that mindset of like, how do I solve it? How do I justify it? How do I make it okay? Because you don't have time to have a problem with it. So you just have to find a way to justify it so that it feels real and you can keep going. So one of the things that came up when I was directing the short, the DP was like, well, we only have, you know, we don't have matching sets of lenses, even though we had two cameras. And I knew that going in. It just didn't make sense for the way I wanted to shoot it to have two matching sets of lenses, which is, I'm not going to bore you with going into why, but at one point we were shooting what could have been matching close-ups, and he was like, but we don't have matching lenses. I said, yeah, I know, but just take a lens that makes Thad feel big and overwhelming and like he's consuming the space, and take a lens that makes Gil feel small and like the world is consuming him, and you know, just, you know, let the lens reflect where they're at emotionally. And he was like, I like the way you think. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Like, but it was just, I didn't skip a beat on it, because that's what I have to do as an actor all the time. You know, it's like, here's this weird problem. And you're like, how do I justify it? How do I solve it? You know? So, I don't know. That's
you know, what's great about that, and I think for anyone, is that if you do anything for any length of time, in your head, you still feel like, oh, I'm the same person as when I started, and I don't know anything. And then, but then when someone, it's sort of the wax on, wax off moment where you're like, how am I doing all of these, blocking all these kicks? You know, like you start spitting things out and you kind of go, oh, actually, I guess I do know some things and I have learned a lot. And there is all that stuff I am absorbing and processing all that information.
Yeah, you just kind of collect things, you know, I think that's how I see it. It's just like you kind of like throw it in the toolbox and you're like, I'll use that. Okay, maybe the wrench will work.
Well, I'm very excited also that you're going to be that you're doing At Midnight tonight, which will be really fun.
Yeah, me too.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
And we are we're about in an hour. We're a little over an hour, so you know what this means? This means we're gonna end with a gratitude circle.
Let's do it.
Okay.
This is gonna be my first gratitude circle since high school, folks.
Okay. Well, it's a hard knock life for us. But I would like to. I am grateful that Jen Morrison came up with the guest book idea. That is Chewbacca guest book, and I feel really grateful about that, Jonah.
I feel really grateful about you feeling grateful about it, Jen.
I feel grateful that I got to witness all of this today, and that I got to meet Scout the dog, and that I got to be the first entry in the guest book.
It's gonna be very exciting, Kyle. Is this what you wanted the entire time? It's never going to happen again. Katie?
I'm grateful that my dog is quiet during all the
time. Oh, Scout's the best. Yeah.
We're all grateful for Scout.
All right. Now, how do we break a gratitude circle? Does someone have to die to break the circle?
I think we need a cheer.
We clap? Yes. We do a clap again?
I think on three we should do Chewbacca.
Okay.
Ready?
Okay.
Ready? One, two, three.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.